Radio 390 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock, time for the news read by John Shea.
The Basque separatist group ETA has announced a ceasefire in its armed campaign. It said it will try to gain independence for the region through democratic means. The Spanish government hasn't yet responded. ETA's violent campaign has led to more than 800 deaths in the past 40 years. It's unclear whether the ceasefire is permanent. The group has twice abandoned ceasefires in the past. A British soldier has died in an explosion in Helmand province in Afghanistan. He was from 1st Battalion, the Royal Regiment of Scotland, serving as part of the Brigade Reconnaissance Force, his family have been told. The Education Secretary, Michael Gove, has said there'll be 16 so-called free schools in England by next September. The schools will be set up by parents, businesses or charities, but within the state system. Mr Gove said the take-up was well above expectations, but Labour called the figure an embarrassment. Mr Gove also said there'd be 140 new academy schools this academic year. The head of the Catholic Church in England and Wales has said it's right that taxpayers should help pay for the Pope's trip to Britain this month. The government will contribute up to £12 million. The Archbishop of Westminster, Vincent Nicholls, said it would be a sad day if the UK said it couldn't afford state visits. Long queues are continuing outside branches of Kabul Bank across Afghanistan because of fears that it may collapse. The government has said it will not let it fail. Soldiers, police and teachers are paid through the bank. Pakistan's High Commissioner to the UK has said three cricket players accused of spot-fixing should be banned for life if they're found guilty. Salman Butt, Mohammad Asif and Mohammad Amir are being investigated by police and the ICC. More details and transcripts of conversations were published in this morning's News of the World. England play Pakistan in a 2020 match this afternoon. And the weather, it'll be a dry, cloudy afternoon for most of the UK with some rain in southern England. This evening there'll be rain in Northern Ireland, most of Wales and parts of the Midlands. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at 2 minutes past one.
And it was read by John Shea. Well, it's time now for the second of this weekend's early music shows. Here's Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to the show and the second of our visits this weekend to Dartington International Summer School near Totnes in Devon. Yesterday we heard about its history and from some of the tutors who travel there each year to coach the students, a mix of up-and-coming professionals and amateurs in the truest sense of the word, all of whom delight in spending a week or so doing what they love best, making music together. Each evening, after a day filled with choral singing, orchestras, consort playing, madrigals and, weather permitting, spontaneous dance sessions on the lawn, as many people as possible squeeze into Dartington's centrepiece, the great medieval hall, for a concert given by the various course tutors. Today we're hearing highlights from a concert given by some old friends of the early music show, the Dufai Collective. Their programme focused on English secular music, medieval ballads and dance tunes alongside some of the popular music heard in the streets and taverns of the 17th century. Later on, I'll be chatting with their leader, Bill Lyons, about the group's music and their work at Dartington. But first, let's hear them in action with the two pieces from the 14th century that began their concert. The song Brid on a Brier, an analogy of love unrequited, followed by an instrumental dance.
Thank you.
A rollicking start to the concert given by the Dufai Collective at Dartington Hall. A dance version of an old ballad tune with bagpipes, symphony, violin and a lot more besides. And before that, one of the very few surviving English secular songs from the Middle Ages, Brid on a Brier, sung by Vivian Ellis. We'll hear her again now in a haunting song accompanied by the harp. It's a beautiful lyric, a heartfelt and very personal plea to God and to Jesus to have pity on humankind. From the prison that I'm in, bring me out and make me free, writes the anonymous poet. Though man can ascend to the heights, death will fell him to the ground. Worldly prosperity for certain lasts but 1 hour.
Rathe shall thereof me so.
sorrow before, but now I sing of my grief. An English song from the Middle Ages in a wistful style, reminiscent of the troubadour tradition of southern France. Vivian Ellis was the vocalist with Peter Skuse on the harp, one of the highlights of the concert given by the Dufai Collective at Dartington Hall in Devon. Earlier in the day, I met up with the group's director, William Lyons, sitting on a couple of deck chairs on the well-manicured lawn just outside the Great Hall and accompanied by the faint tones of singers warming up in the surrounding stone cottages. I asked him whether these sort of anonymous songs were a major part of their repertoire.
Yes, I'm becoming increasingly fascinated by the music in England and music, how it fitted into its social context in England right through Middle Ages and Renaissance and up, right up into the 17th and 18th centuries even. And this programme is the first along a line of exploration of finding sort of folk roots for some pieces, finding folk roots in pieces that you haven't seen them in before, and then looking at a more obvious popular music making from the 17th century, the street ballads and folk song that became part of a popular tradition. So finding those threads that lead you to the essence of a folk tune, perhaps, or of those archetypal lyrics that we find. That's why the programme's called One Morning in May, because that's one of the lines that we find cropping up from the earliest of vernacular English writing, right up until last week at Sidmouth, or next week at Sidmouth Folk Festival.
You divide your programme into roughly two halves. We've got medieval, which there's multiple sort of foot-tapping dances. One hears quite a lot in the medieval repertoire. And then secondly, we've got the ballads. Let's talk a little bit about the medieval repertoire first, because here we really hear some instruments and some textures that add an amazing atmosphere.
Again, with the further back you go, the harder it becomes, obviously, to define what is the function of a piece of music that exists in a very accidental form, sometimes on the flyleaf of a book, as part of a binding for a later book. And so we have these sort of isolated little nuggets of information which throw up many more questions than they answer. But you can, and this is what I've tried to do, is try to recreate a sound world based upon what we know of instruments that were being played in England, the viol, the bowed instrument, the hurdy-gurdy, the bagpipes, the drone-based instruments like that, and of course the harp as the great accompaniment to song, and the solo voice and the a cappella voices as well. These, you can all see the instruments all depicted in various surviving manuscripts and in the great churches such as Beverley, where minstrels used to meet. And so you sort of extrapolate that performance practice from what we know of those instruments. What you will have found is that there isn't a massive use of hundreds of different pieces of percussion. In fact, we're quite sparing with the use of percussion because, again, that had a fairly specific role in music making, as far as we can understand. And the foot tapping dances, people wanted to enjoy themselves, didn't they? Just as much then as they do now. And so, in a way, we're making up a repertoire that isn't there. So we've taken songs and turned them into dances, very much as is common practice in traditional music nowadays.
You get an amazing two-part harmony. It doesn't even sound like Western music at times, in the nota.
Those three two-part pieces that we perform instrumentally. Again, instrumental music, there's so little of it surviving from the Middle Ages, largely because the transmission of repertoire was oral, and rather than any need for it to write it down, minstrels would pass their music from one to the other by playing it to each other. And so we have these rather strange, untexted two-part pieces, which seem very unique, because any music that survives for instruments that we can identify tends to be monophonic. But these are two-part pieces, and nobody knows quite what they are, but looking at various treatises, there's a nota, which is a form of instrumental music, or there's a ductia, which is another term that's been applied to these pieces. And they work wonderfully. Yes, they have this intricate harmony, and quite often they're played very fast as a sort of wild dances, but in this context we're treating them as much slower, courtly dances, like was also referred to as a cantus coronatus, a royal song or dance.
Do Fire Collective with a bouncy rendering of the Ductius, one of just a handful of English dances that have come down to us from the 1400s. Another song from that early period starts this next set, and it's one of my favourites, Myri It Is. Originally, it may well have been quite a lengthy song, but all that remains nowadays, almost 800 years on, is just a fragment, one short verse which in true English tradition appears, a first in any rate, to be a complaint about the weather. Merry it is while summer elast with fugler's song, or we're all merry in the summertime when the birds are singing. It goes on. This nicht is long and it will do me wrong, sore and mourn and fast. In other words, in the cold winter, when nothing can grow, we're mournful and we're hungry. But like so many of these early songs, there seems to be another agenda here. I asked Bill whether it could perhaps be an allegory for love.
Well, I think so. When the sort of refrain at the end of the verse is the sorrow, mourning and fasting, and you're feeling the effects of that awful, dark, long winter when there was nothing to do and life felt very miserable and the bird song was only a memory. But also the voice states that he's been hard done by. Something else has happened as well, and it's compounded by the terrible weather.
Myri it is, will a summer I last with fugler's song. Och nu när ef windes blast and weather's strong. Hey, what this night is long, and each with well each is wrong, sorg and mourning and fast. Myri it is, will a summer I last with fugler's song. Och nu när ef windes blast and weather's strong. What this niche is long, and each with well niche wrong, sorken malung and fast. Myri it is, will a summer I last with fugler's song. Och nu när ef windes blast and weather's strong. What this niche is long, and each with well niche wrong, sorken run and fast. Myri it is, will a summer I last with fugler's song. Och nu när ef windes blast and weather's strong. What this night is long, and each with well meet wrong, sorg and mourn and fast, sorg and mourn and fast.
so-called English dance, a lively version of a 13th century melody performed on bagpipes by members of the Dufay Collective. And before that, we heard the whole band singing Miri It Is. Well, for the second half of their concert from the Great Hall in Dartington, the group moved about 300 years nearer to our own time, to 17th century England, for a medley of some of those quirky dance tunes from the collection published in 1651 by John Playford, entitled The English Dancing Master. Playford ran his music shop from the west porch of the Temple Church in the City of London. And this book was certainly one of his best sellers. It ran into some 18 editions and was even published throughout the Commonwealth period. Cromwell may have had a puritanical aversion to the theatre, but he thoroughly approved of dancing. That is, as long as it didn't involve anything as rude as a maypole. Dufay Collective with a selection of popular dance tunes, which leads us into the second part of their concert, in which they continued with music from mid to late 17th century. So how would the group's leader, Bill Lyons, describe this part of their programme?
All the songs and instrumental music is the sort of music you would have heard particularly in London from the middle to the late 17th centuries, and some tunes which have survived from earlier, from the late 16th century. And all the songs are ballads, or certainly influenced by ballads. We have The Fair Maid of Islington, the young lady who thought to be selling one thing and in fact is selling another. And it's full of double entendre, layered on very thick. And then we have beautiful, famous songs such as My Love is in the Cold Ground, which people sort of know, and it's sort of lying in people's subconscious, but they don't quite know where the roots of this music lies. So stripping it down and going back to the original performances, the original pronunciation, and setting a context for it is what we're aiming for in that second half of the concert.
Receive my own. The justice hearing of their case did then give order straight that he the money should pay down, she should no longer wait. The justice told the vintner plain, if he a tenant be, he must expect to pay the price, for he could not sit rent free. And when the money she had got, she put it in her purse and clapped her hand on the cellar door and said it was never the worse, which caused the people all to laugh to see this vintner fine, outwitted by a country girl about his pipe of wine.
Strong alone, yet still I cry.
the Cold Ground, a gorgeous tune found in Playford's Dancing Master collection and used for a number of ballads. It was even said to have been parodied on stage by Nell Gwynn as she made fun of one rather overweight co-star. Vivian Ellis was the vocalist with the Dufay Collective, and we heard her at the beginning of the set with The Fair Maid of Islington. And in between, Jacob Herringman and David Miller performed another popular ballad tune, My Lord Willoughby's Welcome Home, in a version for two lutes made by John Darland. Well, that's almost it for today, I'm afraid. But before the Dufay Collective play their final set of Playford dances, let's hear once more from William Lyons. As we sat in the sunshine in the leafy quadrangle, I asked him how long he and the group have been associated with Dartington Hall Summer School.
Well, I was just trying to remember how many years it is since we first came here. I think it's something like 18 or 19 years since we first started running our medieval Renaissance course here. So yes, it's very familiar. And as I spent much of my childhood down the road in Cornwall, I used to come here on weekend courses and to concerts all the time. So it's a bit like a sort of dream second home.
It's a very, very special place, this, because you know, everyone here is absolutely focused on music and learning and enjoying themselves. It must be like no other experience for you, really, teaching them.
It certainly is like no other experience. That can have its positive and negative sides, but it is all wonderful. What the fascinating thing is, meeting people from such a variety of backgrounds who come together to make music, whether they're the most basic of amateurs to very gifted semi-professionals or even professionals or students who come, and everyone mixes together, and we're all, it's a very egalitarian setup here.
And we can hear a few of them at it as we speak.
Yes, a remarkable noise.
Bill Lyons, the leader of the Dufay Collective. So to end today's programme of highlights from their concert given in the Great Hall at Dartington, here they are with another medley of Playford dances, starting with Maiden Lane and ending with that wonderfully catchy tune, Sellinger's Round.
Thank you.
a medley of dances published by John Playford in the 17th century, performed by the Defy Collective. And that ends today's Early Music Show, featuring highlights of that concert which the Defy Collective gave at this year's Dartington International Summer School. The programme was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Sam Phillips. This is BBC Radio 3, just coming up to 2 o'clock, and now another in our occasional series of performances by the current intake of Radio 3 New Generation Artists. It's presented by Sarah Walker.
Pianist Francesco Piemontesi starts the programme today. He was born in Switzerland and joined the Radio 3 New Generation Artists scheme last year, and that's just one of many achievements. He's been awarded a Borletti-Buttoni Trust Fellowship, and he's taken part in many international festivals, including the Marta Argerich Project in Lugano. So endorsement from one of the world's most revered pianists can't be bad. Well, the music we're about to hear is Schumann's Toccata, Opus 7. It's an early piece, but one of his most demanding. Let's hear what Francesco Piemontesi has to say about it.
Schumann Toccata is a relatively early piece by Schumann. It's clearly influenced by Baroque music, and I think that the main inspiration came from F major Toccata by Bach. In the introduction to the Toccata, Schumann writes that he tried to avoid as many signs for dynamics or for tempo markings as possible in order to give the interpreter the freedom. Schumann's markings in the Toccata are only for the places where he thought interpreters could get wrong ideas about them. So I think it's fantastic to have a piece by such a great composer where you have also the freedom, and you know that he would agree that you try to go your own way. Thank you.
Schumann's Toccata Opus 7, played there by Francesco Piemontesi, a current member of Radio 3's New Generation Artists scheme. Music by Haydn coming up next, played by the quartet Metaphor. They're a young Finnish ensemble rapidly establishing themselves as rising stars on the international chamber music scene, and they joined up with Radio 3 New Generation Artists in September 2008. Now, by that time, they'd been ploughing a very original furrow for 7 years, and their repertoire includes quite a few contemporary pieces, many of which have been dedicated to them. But Haydn is also central to their work, and the piece we'll hear now is a quartet in A major, Opus 55, number 1.